Welcome back to Defrag. I'm here with my good man, Gove. How you doing, Gove?
Good. How about you, Larry?
Good. So we're going to cover, we got a short show today, so we want to cover a few things. We've got a couple of solutions. We've got, we want to cover Windows 7 shutdown delays, and then we're going to cover some of the things that you would use to get in touch with us and to track problems so we can help people solve things. And then we want to talk a little bit about how we're going to try to troubleshoot some things in real time on the show. That'll be interesting.
Well, at least cover some of the steps to help troubleshoot some things.
Yeah. All right. So first of all, we've got an email from David Young who had a home group question from Defrag 1. And he says, I recently ran into an issue with home group myself. My laptop set up and connected fine, but my desktop did not see the home group. After digging into the services in Windows Task Manager, I noticed that local PureNet services were not running. Trying to activate them directly resulted in error codes that were generic and useless. The way I resolved this issue was to remove and then reinstall the DLLs for my local peer network services. After that, my home group was up and running in no time. What can we learn from this?
Well, it's actually kind of interesting where he said that he removed the DLLs and then re-registered them.
Yeah.
Now, normally for Vista and Win 7, those DLLs should not be removable, and re-registering them won't do anything.
Shouldn't do anything.
Shouldn't do anything. Yeah. So yeah. It was actually kind of confusing when I saw that, how he was able to actually fix it. What I think actually what happened is that in the re-registration process, it reset something in the registry back to a default value that allowed him to continue to work. It actually be very interesting to see what those error codes are and actually kind of digging in and investigating why that particular machine was so different from the rest of his network.
Yeah.
Because, A, it could be a lurking bug that maybe is very hard to repro, but you know, as we get more and more information and we understand the environment that this is in, it would actually help us to really troubleshoot those kinds of problems.
Yeah. So sometimes people online will mention that you should re-register DLLs. Is there ever a time when you'd want to do that, and should it ever make a difference?
On Vista and Win 7, we have something in the OS called Windows Resource Protection. And what that essentially is it doesn't allow regular users or regular installers or even system components to overwrite or change registry keys in certain files.
Yeah.
So really re-registering when you see on a website regserve 32 on a particular DLL, more often than not it actually won't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's highly unlikely that you should really have to do any of that in Vista or Win 7.
Cool. All right, so next one was a question we had from our one of our previous shows where they asked about Windows 7 shutdown delays. We didn't have time for it on that show, but I wanted to hit it on this show because I get this every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You go to shut down Windows, and it'll hang for whatever reason. Sometimes it comes up and says, do you want to force this application to quit?
Mm-hmm.
What causes that, and what's the best way to walk through troubleshooting how to fix that?
So there are a couple of different things that can happen during the shutdown process. During the shutdown, there is a pre-notification that's sent to services in order to allow them to properly clean up their state and shut down. In Win 7, we went pretty hardcore in not letting applications veto the shutdown process.
Yeah.
But every now and again, drivers can hold on to a lock for too long, in which case timeouts start occurring. Those generally range anywhere from 30 seconds to 2 minute timeouts. So it'd actually be very interesting to see, like, from the moment you shut down, if you actually time it, what the exact time is to shut it down.
Interesting.
You can go and check the event log after you've rebooted to see if there's any application error crashes, service timeouts. The service control manager is the one that controls all of that and will log event saying, you know, this particular service took too long to shut down, it was terminated.
All right, and we're going to look at where we find some of these log files here in the end of the show here.
Yep. Cool. Another thing that you can do to help troubleshoot is when you're shutting down, are you shutting down with a lot of applications that are already running?
Mm-hmm.
If you are, you can pre-shut down those applications and then try it. You can check your notification area and see what's running in there, and you can pre-shut down those applications as well.
Yeah.
If you have third-party services, and you can check, most of you probably already know how to check out third-party services, or any services for that matter, running on the system. Services.msc is the fastest way to get to it.
Yeah.
And and you can see all the list of services that are running on your system. I like to sort them by their current status. Mm-hmm. So you can see all the ones that are started versus all the services that are actually registered.
Yeah.
And from there, I wouldn't recommend doing anything as drastic as randomly turning off services, mm-hmm. but you can at least take a look through it and see which ones are system services versus non-system services.
Yeah.
So
it seems like every time I go in here, I'll find something that I can turn off anyway. So it doesn't hurt to go in here once in a while and clean it up.
It doesn't hurt to go in there once in a while, but you should realize that on a default install of Windows, not barring any third-party applications that got installed, you don't want to mess with those services because the system has already been performance-tuned to the vast majority of situations. Mm-hmm. So the services that we ship with that are currently running are the ones that should be currently running.
Now, are you talking about specifically for an OEM-branded machine, or if I build my own machine, is it going to be tuned for that?
So even if you build your own machine, the default install without any other changes to it is going to be the best configuration for your system. OEMs can add services, but they're not supposed to turn off any services that are on the default install of Windows.
Cool. All right, so the next thing that we want to get to is some of the problems, like the problem step recorder. We want to go through how you use that. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the things that you'll want to do if you're going to send us kind of a sticky problem that you want us to work through. Sometimes we need things like the event logs. And so walk us through some of the things that you would like to get from people to help troubleshoot problems.
So there is a utility in the OS, as you've alluded to, called Problem Steps Recorder. And you can find it from the start menu.
I just type problem stops steps and hit enter, and it
record steps to reproduce a problem is what shows up for me. So here's the application. It is able to record in real time exactly what you're doing, and we'll just run through something right now. So I'll hit start record, and let's say I need to install an application, and I just picked on this one. We say install. And it's running through the install. You can see it's recording now. The great thing about the Problem Steps Recorder is that it's not taking a movie of what you're doing. It's just taking the screenshots as things are transitioning. So the end result of this recording is actually very small.
Yeah,
it's easily transmittable.
Yeah, and it'll make a zip file for you when you're done.
Yep.
Nice and small.
And it'll preview in any browser that supports MHT extensions.
Now, I haven't used the add comment function up there. Does that add a comment right in the middle of your recording here, or is this something that gets appended to it afterwards?
Yeah, so we can say, setup is taking a while because this machine is rather slow. So you can see that there's a timestamp.
Yeah.
And it took that particular screenshot there.
You didn't have anything bigger you could install?
This is only a 30 meg install, that's just it.
Yeah.
But we can actually just stop recording.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually have to go all the way through.
Okay.
And it, just picking where to save it. I need to give it a file name. Okay. So there you see the desktop, there you see each screenshot as it's happening.
So everywhere that you clicked, you can denote that.
Yep.
And we have our notes.
And you have your note. Setup is taking a while because this machine is rather slow.
Very cool.
And it's actually kind of interesting because it tells you all the different UI elements, everything that you clicked on or typed in, it'll record those actions for you.
Very cool. And as a problem solver, this has just got to be awesome for you.
Yeah, because there's a lot of times where somebody will say, you know, I ran this app and it didn't install correctly.
Yeah.
Well, how did you run the app? Did you run it from the command line? Did you run it from Explorer? Did mm-hmm. you run it from the network? All these kinds of questions can be easily answered by the Problem Stops Recorder.
Okay. And so you can take that zip file, you can attach it to an email. Email us at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we can take it from there.
Yep.
Very cool. Now, what types of event logs would you like to see?
So usually the most actionable event logs are the application event logs. So you can get there by typing event VWR or event viewer in the start menu and let mm-hmm. it search for itself. So those logs are under Windows logs. Here's the application log. And while you can take sections of the event log and you can export them and send those, preferably you'd like to see the whole log because, or at least a good day's worth prior to the problem, because
yeah.
You might actually miss something that's related to the issue.
And how big is a day's worth of logs?
Oh, it's not very large at all.
Yeah, so it would work in an email.
Yeah. So like one of the things that it just logged was the installation of this application. So Windows installer, install Calibre, and you know it tells you right there. And it had a success status of 0, which means it worked. One interesting thing is like, let's say it didn't work, you know, and you'd still get an event and it would have had an error status of like 1603, which is install failed.
Mm-hmm.
MSI has some really, really rich logging that you can use. And I'm going to show you how to gather that log that you can now attach alongside your event logs.
Okay.
So the way that I like to do this is you can add a registry key that will turn on some super verbose logging on the system. That is okay, so I know I went through that rather quickly.
Yeah.
The thing that you really need to realize is that it's under HKLM, HK Local Machine, Software, Policies, Microsoft, Windows, Installer.
Okay.
And then you create two new keys here. A string value called logging, and this is going to look funny, but trust me, it works. It's the way that I remember it. Is a mnemonic called voice warm up. This is actually different options.
Okay.
So it's verbose. I'm not going to go into all the details, but this will give you as much logging as you could possibly ever need.
All right.
There is another value, is the debug logging. And its maximum value is 7.
Okay.
So you set those two options, and you close out of the registry editor. You need to do one other step in order to get MSI to recognize those changes. So what I'm doing right now is stopping the MSI server service, and then restarting it. Yes, you can do this through the services.mst, but I'm a command line kind of guy, so I like doing it through here. I also get any additional error messages that would show up in case the service didn't restart correctly. So now what I'm going to do...
So this verbose logging that you're doing here, is this something you want to turn off after you've done your troubleshooting, or do you just leave it on all the time?
It's kind of up to you. There is definitely an overhead for leaving it on.
Yeah.
But if you have, say, an intermittent issue, I wouldn't say... you know, never leave it on.
Yeah.
The only thing that it does hurt is performance during install and uninstall of applications.
Mm-hmm.
So now what I'm going to do is go to Programs and Features and uninstall Calibre. Yes. So I can show you in here, back in the elevated CMD, is the logs get stored in your user's temp directory.
Okay.
So just cd temp. For anything where I'm doing real-time logging, I like to sort my stuff by date because then I don't have to go hunting for a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the logs are prefixed with MSI and then a random set of characters log.
Is this one of the only things that you check if you have a problem with installing an MSI?
Yes. MSI logs are so rich, full of information, that mm-hmm. I can pretty much diagnose anything from those logs.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, I can tell what my next step is going to be in debugging the actual issue.
And if it's not an MSI, is there anything that you can use otherwise?
If it's a non-MSI, if it's something like install shield,
yeah.
It will also typically have logs. It's finding them is a little bit more difficult because different versions of install shield will put their logs in different places.
Sure.
So again, I usually typically look in the temp directory. The other place that I would look at is the Windows temp directory. So a lot of different services like to stick their stuff in here.
Yeah.
So this is another place where logs typically live.
Cool.
So going back to the MSI log, you can see here that it's an 8 meg log.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, it's text, so when it's zipped up, it's very tiny.
Yeah.
And you can see the different options that were used, you know, debug equals 7.
So if you email us one of these, be kind and zip.
Be kind and zip, exactly. So one of the first things that I look at if I see a failure in an MSI log is return value 3.
Okay.
That is a typical error. So if you can find that anywhere in your log, you're going to narrow it down exactly to where the problem is.
Cool.
If you don't get that, that you know, you're not guaranteed to see that particular error in a log,
mm-hmm.
what you do is go down to the very bottom, and then you look at this. You look in the last little section here, and you see the removal success or error status. If you see 1603 or a non-zero status
yeah.
here, what you then do is search backwards in the file for the first instance of that error code.
Okay.
And then, again, from there, you'll be able to figure out what's going on.
So in Windows 7, sometimes when I install an application, I get a dialog afterwards that said, did this application install correctly?
And you the program
yes
compatibility
or,
assistant.
Yeah, and so tell me about that. What is that utility actually doing? What's it looking for? And I've noticed sometimes I get that even when things look like they did go through okay. Do I need to check a log to make sure that they worked? Or just click, yeah, this installed correctly?
It's kind of an interesting problem. That is a heuristic-based mechanism that we have in the OS to help the user solve installation or uninstallation problems.
Mm-hmm.
So for install, what it's typically looking for is, did it create files in program files? Did it set an entry in the add or remove programs?
Yeah.
So a lot of installers may not actually set that. It may just be an update.
And sometimes I've canceled my install. Like I start doing it, I'm like, I don't want to do this, and I cancel it, and then I get that dialogue.
Because we can't tell that you canceled it versus the app exited prematurely for whatever
crashed
reason.
Or whatever had happened.
Yes. So it's a heuristic that it's being refined over time. But what we tend to ask for in terms of installers, for people that are writing installers, is either use MSI or use a different base installer that will properly register all of its components.
Cool. Okay. So one of the other things we were talking earlier that we wanted to mention on the show is how do you proceed if you have a Windows Update failure?
So Windows Update failures, you will see oftentimes an error code that shows up here, and it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can view an update history. I had a failed one back in March. So what you want to do here is Windows Update keeps a pretty rich log as well. And I shall show you where that is. So it's at the root of the Windows directory. And I believe this is actually a pretty big file as well. That's a meg. So what you can do here is, usually the best thing to do is search for the KB article.
Yeah.
Because it'll have that in here. And if we want to go look for that particular update that failed, see what it says in my update history. 2461481. And the particular definition version that failed was 435.
And I hope it's okay to have that beta name up on the screen right now.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
So there's the successful one. Here it is. So you can look for return codes here. You can go and check on the net for what these return codes are. You can use, what I like to use typically for these kinds of error codes are the debugging tools for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go download them from the net as well. And
where do you find those at?
So the debugging tools you can find right here. Debugging tools for Windows. Always download them from the Microsoft websites. You don't know how they might have changed in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So you can download it through the SDK and just follow these instructions and you get the public version of the debuggers. I've got private versions installed on my machine. What I like to do is just pick on an application because I can get into it and quickly get into the debugger. And then use an extension called Bang Error on the actual error code. And we'll see if it actually tells us anything. It's not foolproof. It doesn't have every single error code in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there we go.
Oh.
There's not enough space on the disk.
Well, that's simple one.
Which is very common, actually, because especially on this machine, it's been running very low on disk space. So there you go.
Very cool. So event logs, how to save them, problem step recorder. These are the preferred things that we like to get when we're trying to troubleshoot something that's kind of hairy.
Yep.
Email us at defragshow@microsoft.com with those files, and we can go a lot further towards helping people out. And that's our show for this week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.